evening. And I choose those words very, very carefully. It's a very special evening in the sense that we're going to have the privilege to hear from Rabbi Lev Shlita. And I commented to him a moment ago that I remember last time, whatever introduction I gave, I certainly didn't give to make him feel uncomfortable. So I know that he truly doesn't want a lengthy introduction, so I will say for us, if you look throughout the whole Heichal, how many people came from North Miami Beach in South Florida, it's a very special evening. Because any time you can be inspired by one of the leaders of our generation, you know that's a schus that everyone should make sure to take to heart. If thousands of people, well actually I'm sure it's a lot more than that, around the world get such clear and sage advice about anything and inspiration from Rabbi Lev, then to have him here tonight for us makes it truly a very special, and it's an honor for us, one that we don't take for granted. I mentioned it's a very memorable evening because obviously it's words of Hesped for Rabbi Groner Zatzal. We certainly welcome his Rebbetzin, Rebbetzin Groner, and her daughters. And to be able to hear from Rabbi Lev about Yevoda ben Chaim L'Chaim, about Rabbi Groner Zatzal, is it makes tonight's Hesped and Divrei Zikaron very, very meaningful. I'll just say on a little bit of a personal note, when last week I actually went to New York for a family simcha, but was able to go to the Groners to be Menachem Avol. So I mentioned to the family, in fact, the family that's here right now, I mentioned to them that I have had such a karas atoiv to Rabbi Groner. I remember there were many times, besides the fact that the Groner family certainly knows me my entire life, but there were many times over the last 15 plus years that I've been here in North Miami Beach that Rabbi Groner would just walk in from Kahal Hasidim, and with the beautiful Hadras Ponim and the presence that he so was and exemplified, many, many times just initiated, can I help in this area, can I help in that area, and did things to help me, l'maisa. And the way that he did it with a role of leadership and at the same time such love is something that I have tremendous hakara satayim. And I gave very specific examples to Rebbetzin Groner and her children about the many times he came from next door and just helped me and others with whatever the situation was. At that point, Rebbetzin Groner said to me last week, do you remember the phone call from right after you moved to North Miami Beach? And I apologize, I had forgotten. But it was so beautiful that she took the time to remind me last week during Shiva. She reminded me that right after I came here to Shari Tefillah, North Miami Beach, I got a phone call from Rabbi Groner, and he said, and again, he was very specific, whatever I can do to help you, if it's in this area or that area, with a Dvar Torah, with help, with a meeting, with a phone call. And he went on, as the Rebbetzin reminded me, to list the whole potpourri of situations. He said, I'll be happy to help you. And for me, that was a tremendous honor. And then the Rebbetzin reminded me, the Rabbi Groner then added, and don't worry, you don't have to tell anybody that I helped you or I took care of this situation. You can take all of the credit. That's very much who Rabbi Groner Zatzal was. As one of the children said to me, in the family, they always referred to him, or people referred to him in the most loving way, as a gentle giant. And that's what makes tonight a very memorable evening. So when you're privileged to have a very special evening with a very memorable evening, it's something that should go into the hearts of all the members from South Florida who are here. Just one final reminder. One of the reasons Rabbi Lev and his Rebbetzin come to South Florida is to raise funds for his Yeshiva Gedayla. I see someone just say, oh, I forgot to bring a check. But that is all the tzedakah that will be given tonight or after tonight will be Lezecher Ule'ila Nishmas Rabbi Groner. In fact, in the memo of the check, you can clearly write that it's in memory of Rabbi Groner Zatzal. The checks themselves should be made out to Yeshiva Gedolei Matisyahu. And the Ezra Hashem will be able from tonight to raise a tremendous amount of money that will not only help the Yeshiva Gedolei and Rabbi Lev, but also be able to be Lezecher Ule'ila Nishmas Rabbi Groner. For us, it is a schus that's hard to put into words to hear it from Rabbi Lev Shlip.
Shus Yedidi Achoshuv, Mora da Asra, Rabbi Shapiro Shlita. Tell you the truth, I see that it was Hashgachas Hashem that I should have been in New York in order to be able to attend the Levaya of Mori Varebi, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. We really had intended to come a week later, and instead we came a week earlier, and we found out Mamish Motzei Shabbos that Rabbi Grosvenor had been Nifter, and that the Levaya was that night, and we rushed from Far Rockaway to Brooklyn and made it Mamish within minutes before the Levaya left for the airport. And it's also Basher that I should be here tonight at the end of Shiva, and therefore under normal circumstances I don't know if I am the one who is Roy to be Maspid Rabbi Groner Zecher Tzadik Livracha. I feel katonti that I am not the one to be able to sing his praises and to assess his greatness in a hesped any greater people than me. But sometimes you see the hashgacha of the Rabbanu Shel Olam, and he puts you in a place where you have no choice. So I'm going to try to fulfill the mandate that I see the Rabbanu Shel Olam has set for me. At the Levaya, I was able to mention a very important point that I felt personally that I benefited from Rabbi Groner, who is my Rebbe. You know, most of you or many of you don't know Rabbi Groner as I know him. You know him, I'm going back about 50 years. And Rabbi Groner and Yibod L'chaim Tovim Aruchim, Rabbi Simon, were the Rosh Mesifta in the Mesifta. There wasn't a yeshiva here, not two or three yeshivas, not one yeshiva. The Mesifta was the Mokum Torah of South Florida. And in my graduating class, we didn't have a minyan. We had nine young men. And I know Rabbi Groner as the Torah personality, the yeshivisha personality of South Florida. And he was my Rebbe. And a Rebbe has Chazal tell us in three places that a Rebbe is like a father, or even more than a father. In Sanhedrin, the Gemara says on the Pasuk, V'hanefesh asher osu b'choron, Avraham Avinu fashioned and formed people that he brought under the wings of the Rabbanu Shel Olam. Hanefesh asher osu, and Chazal say, Kol hamalamid chaveiro toro, ben chaveiro toro kilo aso. It's like you made him. Fashioned him. Another place Chazal say, Vishinantom Livonecha Elo Atalmidim, that a Talmud is called a child and a Rebbe is called a father. And the third place Chazal say on the Pasuk, Ela Toldos Moshe V'Aaron, Torah says these are the children of Moshe and Aaron, and it only lists the children of Aaron. To tell me that since Moshe Rabbeinu taught Aaron's children Torah, ki'ilu yoldo, as if he gave birth to them also, they were his children too. It always bothered me, why do you need three sources in Chazal to tell me the same idea? that students are like children and that Rebbeim are like parents. But I think each one tells me a different idea. There are some people who without a Rebbe would have no source to learn Torah. Avraham Avinu brought people who had no one else to teach them. He was their sole source of connection to Torah, to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That kind of person creates the person. The Maharsha says, without Torah, a person is like a behema. Moser ha'adam and a behema ayin. And someone who teaches someone Torah who would not have had access to Torah at all, without that person, ki'ilu aso, it's like he made him into a human being. And then there are people who have people to teach them Torah, but not with the depth and the breadth that the Rebbe can teach them. V'shinantam, shiu divrei Torah, chidudim al picha. They have a father. They have people who can teach them Torah, but up to a point. And the Rebbe teaches them beyond that point. There the Rebbe is called like a father. And then there are people who have parents who could teach them Torah with depth and with breadth. Aaron HaKohen could do a nice job teaching his children. And still, if Moshe Rabbeinu taught Aaron's children, he added dimension. He gave them something else that Aaron didn't give them, because everybody has a unique portion in Torah. Then there is still Kilu Yoldo. He added a little bit to the DNA of that person. I am made on myself that Rabbi Groner fulfilled all of those three functions with me. In the beginning, it's Ki'ilu Asohu, to him, together with others here, with Mekayim, what it says in Hallel, Mikimi, may offer dol, may ashpos, yorim evyon. I made on myself. Without them, who knows where I'd be, what I would be. So he took me and made me into whatever I could ever claim to be. These are the people, together with others here in the community, that made me into a mensch. Somebody who has an inkling of what Torah is. And then, when I went on to learn from his great Rebbeim, and I had others to teach me, those who taught him, I went on to Telze Yeshiva, and learned from his Rebbeim. But he still added a dimension that throughout his life, till the last kufa, we had a tremendous connection, and I had somebody to learn from. And throughout all that time in between, he was mamash like a father. Mamash like a father. With guidance, with warmth, and therefore all three functions of a Rebbe. Ki'ilu asahu, the one who adds the depth of learning, and the father, all of them applied. I think there's another idea also, and that is a Rebbe has, aside from three different kinds of Rebbeim, a Rebbe also has three different functions. A Rebbe is there to fashion and form the personality of his Talmud. He's there also to enlighten him and to give him knowledge, to teach him the breadth and the depth of Torah. And he's there also to be like a Moshe Rabbeinu, to give him a connection to Har Sinai. And that's what a Rebbe is. A Rebbe is the link to Mesorah, to Maimed Har Sinai. A Rebbe is he who connects that Talmud, who connects that student to the past, to the Makor, to the foundation of what Torah is, to Dvar Hashem. And I think that I benefited from Mori V'Rebbe, Rav Mishaya, and Shneer Zalman, Zecher Tzadik Livrocha, in all three ways. How does a Rebbe accomplish that? How does a person become that kind of person who can form and fashion other people, who can bring to them the depth and breadth of Torah and connect them to Har Sinai? How do you do it? What kind of person do you need? The Rambam, in the end of Hilchos Shmita V'Yovel, describes Shevet Levi as being Chel Hashem. They are the army of the Rabbanu Shel Olam, and therefore they are set aside and separated from all the mundane pursuits of this world in order that they can teach and disseminate Torah to Klal Yisrael. And then the Rambam says it's not only Shevet Levi, not only those who were born Leviim, but Kol Ish V'Ish Mikol Boy Olam, any individual who sees fit to separate himself from the mundane pursuits of this world and to dedicate himself totally to Torah, to Avodas Hashem, to disseminating Torah in this world, becomes like a Levi, a Niskadish Kodesh Kadoshim. He becomes holy of holies. And the Rabbanu Shel Olam will provide for him what he needs in this world, like he provides for the Kohanim and Leviim. Rabbi Groner was one of these Leviim. And because he was a Levi, who was part of Chel Hashem, he was a soldier in the Rabbanu Shel Olam's army, a soldier does not choose to take it easy in this world. He was not a Mavakish Leshe B'Shalva. He could have been, he was a Rebbe in Telz, prestigious Rebbe, could have remained in Telz at Yeshiva as a Rebbe, with a Parnasa, with honor, kavod, with Talmidim who appreciated what he could give them. But a soldier volunteers to go to the front, not to stay where it's comfortable. And he came to Miami, not Miami of today, the Miami of those years. I don't know how many of you, I look around, there's a few faces who remember. Rabbi Weber remembers Miami of those years. Miami was a desert, Torah-wise, in those years. Very, very few people who represented Torah altogether. Rabbi Groh, Zecher Tzadik Livrocha, came here and transformed a desert into a place that there was a havamin of having some kind of Torah, and the others that joined him. But a Rebbe from Telzer Yeshiva, Rabbi Simon, came, Bodel Chaim Tovim Aruchim, the year before. There was a Rabbi Weinreb before that. Rabbi Gross brought them here to bring what the yeshiva world to Miami. It didn't exist here. And here are two demuyos of what the yeshiva is, tells the yeshiva, transplanted in Miami Beach. Didn't exist. To Talmidim as myself, who were as far from Telz Yeshiva as Mars is from this earth. And they came here and they created the foundation and the seeds of what you see today. Beautiful community. When I was here, there was only one shul. Then there was a breakaway shul, which happens to be this shul. And now, how many shuls? 15 shuls in North Miami Beach. Kenai Nahara, Kain Yirbo, as long as I'm not here, Kain Yirbo. Yeshivas, Masiftis, Mechinas. But it doesn't happen by itself. It happens because somebody is brave enough and willing to sacrifice and come to a midbar and to build the seeds and the foundation for all the Torah that's going to come. And everyone who benefits from Torah over the last 50 years here in North Miami Beach, in Miami Beach, in South Dade, have those individuals to thank. How do you do it? How do you do it? How did they do it? So Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Mishnah says that Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma was once traveling and he met someone, seemed to be a menschlich person. He gave him shalom, shalom alech Rebbe. He answered him shalom. And the person asked Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma, where do you come from? So he said, I come from a city of Talmidei Chachamim, yeshivas. He said, I envy you. I'm jealous of you. Because I come from a city where there's no Torah. There are no Talmidei Chachamim. There's nothing. Ritzoncha shetodur imanu bimkomeinu. Would you like to come and live with us? Vani etein lecha kesev v'zov umargolios tovos. We'll give you everything. Unlimited budget. Come and live with us. In our place, so we'll have also a Talmud Chacham living in our place. Now the Chora, if you didn't know how the Mishnah ends, what would you think the proper response of Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma would be? Where's the next flight out? How did any Makom Torah ever get started? If not that somebody went to a new place where there wasn't Torah and brought Torah. Lakewood, New Jersey was not a Makom Torah before Rav Aaron Kotler Zatzal went there and built the Makom Torah. So Bnei Brak was not a Makom Torah until the Chazon Ish went there and the Ponevizharov and built the Makom Torah. It wasn't a Makom Torah. Yerushalayim was the Makom Torah. And here he was offered unlimited funds. Unlimited budget. So go, start a yeshiva, start a Beis Yaakov, right? Bring Talmidei Chachamim, and create a new Makom Torah. What does Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma say? You can give me all the money in the world. Eneni dor ela b'makom Torah. I will only live in a Makom Torah. Doesn't seem to make sense. That should be the response. What I think the Mishnah means is the following. Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma did not say no. He just didn't like the conditions of the invitation. The invitation was redundant. Ritzoncha shetodur imanu bimkomeinu. Would you like to come and live with us in our place? It's redundant. Live with us, obviously, in our place. Live in our place, obviously, with us. What's ritzoncha shetodur imanu bimkomeinu? You know how you build a Makom Torah? You know how you influence other people? By coming to their place and creating a Makom Torah amongst them, but not with them. You don't go down to the level of the community that you are trying to influence and live shoulder to shoulder, because then everybody reaches the lowest common denominator. But you create amongst that community your own Makom Torah with its own standards and its own values, separate. Not isolated, but insulated. With different values and different standards where people can come and look up to that Makom Torah. That's what Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma said. You can give me all the money in the world. I'm not coming. Ladur bimkomcha imachem. Imanu bimkomeinu. I'll come and live in your place. But in any dor el b'makom Torah, I will create amongst you a Makom Torah like the artist's conception of a colony on the moon. It's on the moon, but it's separated with a plastic bubble in which there's the atmosphere and the oxygen or whatever. It's on the moon, but it's not together with the moon. It's insulated. It's your own Makom Torah. And people are able to come and observe the standards and the values of that Makom Torah and have something to look up to. Then you can create a hashpah. Then you can create an influence on a community. But if you come to live and water down your standards and live shoulder to shoulder, everybody together, then everybody's going to reach the lowest common denominator. And that's how a Levi has to be. You would think the Leviim, Yoru Mishpatecho LeYaakov V'Sorascho LeYisrael. The Leviim are the disseminators of Torah to Klal Yisrael. They should be mixed in with all of Klal Yisrael. The Leviim have to be separated, not because there's something wrong with Klal Yisrael. Because when the Torah speaks about the division and the separation of the Leviim from Klal Yisrael, it mentions Bnei Yisrael 5 times to tell me that they're chaviv and they're precious like the 5 books of the Torah. There's nothing wrong with Klal Yisrael. But if you want to raise their level, if you want to give them something to look up to, then the Levi has to be separated, not isolated, insulated from the rest of Klal Yisrael, to be able to create standards and values that are beyond what the tzibur is, so they have something to look up to. And that's the truth is, that's the way Klal Yisrael have to live. We have to be separated from the nations of the world. We're supposed to be mashpi on the world. We're supposed to be or la'amim. But if we live shoulder to shoulder together with the rest of the world, then we will be influenced by their standards and their values, and everybody will reach the lowest common denominator. So we have to create a society, v'avdil eschem min ha'amim, insulated from the rest of the world, with our own standards and our own values. And the ideal is to live in our own place, an Eretz HaKodesh, to live the Kedusha where every aspect of life is holy. And then from that Makom Torah, that Makom Kodesh, called Eretz Yisrael, then the light of Torah disseminates to the world, then the nations of the world have something to look up to. But if we live together with them, not insulated, then we'll all reach the lowest common denominator when we're in Golis. And we're still in Golis. Even in Eretz Yisrael, we're in Golis. So then Klal Yisrael has to live amongst the nations of the world the same way. And therefore, when Yosef told his brothers that he's going to tell Paro that they came to Mitzrayim, he said it in a very strange way. He said, I'm going to tell Paro, Achai ubeisovi asher be'eretz Kanan bo elai. That's not what he should have said. They weren't be'eretz Kanan. They had come to Mitzrayim. They were narrow Mitzrayim. He should have said, Asher me'eretz Kanan bo elai. And Taka, when he said it to Paro, that's what he said. Achai ubeisovi bo me'eretz Kanan. Why did he tell the brothers, I'm going to tell Paro, Achai ubeisovi asher be'eretz Kanan bo elai? Because he understood that Yaakov Avinu never left Eretz Yisrael. But he took Eretz Yisrael and transplanted it in Mitzrayim, in its own insulated Mokum Torah. And then he could survive. And then he could have a hashpah in Mitzrayim too. But if they came to Eretz Mitzrayim, they were always Haboyim Mitzrayim. They never came. They're always on the way. But they never integrated, assimilated into Mitzrayim. They were always Be'eretz Kanan, creating a little enclave of Eretz Kanan in Eretz Mitzrayim. That's how Jews have to live in Golis throughout the generations. Chazal tell us that Bote Knesios Bote Midrashos Shebechutz Laaretz have a din of Eretz Yisrael. That's a nice idea. But it means that Klal Yisrael have to transplant that Kiddush of Eretz Yisrael, that va'avdil eschem min ha'amim, and create enclaves of Kedusha, mekomos ha'Torah, bote knesios, bote medrashos, and they become the insulated mekomos ha'Torah, and then you can survive in Golis. There's a medrash. The medrash says, on the pasuk in Noah, l'mishbechoseyem yotzu min ha'teva, Mikan sheyotzi mibeis haknesses mishpachos mishpachos. We don't have the family that prays together, stays together. We have the women over there behind this unbelievable mechitza, which on this side I can't see except some nice fruits, shiva samot minim. And I went mincha time on the other side, and you can see perfectly. It's halfly the fella. Okay, but we don't pray together. We're separate. But at least to leave shul together. That's what Medrash says. Mikan sheyotzim beisakneses, mishpachos mishpachos. What's the simple meaning of the Medrash? Teva is a boat. But in the language of the Mishnah, the Teva was the Aron Kodesh. Motzinas ha-Teva l'rchova shalir, ha-yotzi lifnei ha-omid lifnei ha-Teva. Teva is the Aron Kodesh. So the Mishpachoseyem Yotzu min ha-teva, when you leave the Aron Kodesh, so you leave Mishpachos Mishpachos. And in English it's still preserved. There's Noah's Ark and there's the Holy Ark. So they're both arks. So when you leave the Ark, you leave Mishpachos. What does it really mean? We live in a world where we are inundated with flood waters all over. And if you're not careful, you'll drown. All kinds of dangers, all kinds of murky waters. And the only way to survive them, you can't escape them. You can't run away from them. They're everywhere. The most you can do is put yourself in a teva and insulate yourself from those floodwaters. And the tevas are bote kinesios and bote medrashos. Those are the tevos that a person is able to be protected from those waters that threaten to inundate one. But you can't stay in a shul your whole life. You can't stay in a base medrash your whole life. At some point you have to leave. How can you leave and still be protected? That's what the medrash says. The mishpachos sehem yotzu min ateva. If you want to be able to leave the teva, then you have to create a lifeboat that has the same saving power, the same insulation as the teva. If you make your families, your mishpachos, with the same standards and the same values as those tevas, the bote knesios and bote medrashos, then you'll be able to survive even when you leave the base medrash, even when you leave the base haknesses. The mishpachos seyem yotzu min ateva. And that's exactly what Rabbi Groner, Zecher Tzadik Livrocha, and Yibod L'chaim Tovim Baruchim, his Rebbetzin, and Rabbi Simon and his Rebbetzin did when they left Tells. They created a Mokum Torah in Miami Beach. They didn't in any way dilute their standards. They transplanted Tellser Yeshiva in Miami Beach. And they demanded of the Masifta the same standards, not necessarily with the same exact way. It had to be accommodated to what Miami Beach was. But basically the same standards. And their mishpachos, not just the Beis Medrash, but their families, were beacons and representations of what real Yeshivish Torah is. And that had the greatest effect on the Talmidim, not so much the Shiurim. More so even their personal example, their family's personal example. And therefore, what I got from my Rebbeim, from my Rebbe, Rabbi Groner, Zecher Tzadik Livrocha, was more than just information. How to learn up a sugya, how to learn a gemara, how to learn a Mishnah Brura, that was very important. But the Navi complains that Klal Yisrael keep the Torah, tzav l'tzav, kav l'kav, ze'er sham, ze'er sham, a mitzvah here, a mitzvah there, a little bit here, a line there. On the surface, doesn't seem to be understandable what the problem is. That's the way we keep the Torah. We don't sit in the sukkah, wave estrog and lulav, eat matzah and blow shofar all at once. You do a mitzvah here and a mitzvah there, and every day has its different mitzvahs. What's the problem that we keep the Torah tzav l'tzav? Well, the answer is the Torah is not just a bunch of things to do, but it is a representation of one united will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, one Ratzon Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one, and His will is one. And the Rabban Shem wants us to create a lifestyle with values and standards and goals that represent what Ratzon Hashem is. Except that is so overwhelming. It's so all-encompassing, it's impossible to relate to. And therefore the Rabban Shem broke down that Ratzon Hashem, that one all-encompassing will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu into its components called mitzvahs. I always like to compare it. If you have a gigantic light bulb that is so bright and so big that you can't look at it. It's too big to look at. Too bright. So you enclose the light bulb in a globe. And in the globe you cut 613 little windows all around. Through each little window you can see one small portion of the light bulb. There's only one light bulb. How do you know what the light bulb looks like in its entirety? If you look through each of the 613 windows consecutively, you'll get a composite picture of a light bulb. Those are mitzvahs. In order to be able to open those windows, to see what the mitzvah represents, more than just that narrow mitzvah, but what it represents and how a person is supposed to apply it to his life, to his personality, to his values and his standards. So you have to do the mitzvah properly. You have to be a shomea likol Hashem. Torah speaks about listening to the Rabban Shalom. If you don't listen meticulously, you'll never open the windows. But that doesn't end there. Once you do the mitzvah and you open that window, now there's a second level. Lishmoa bikol Hashem. Listen into what the Rabban Shalom said. What's that mitzvah supposed to teach me? Not just about that narrow mitzvah, but about my life, my values, my standards, my way of life, my personality. And that's what the Navi complains. Yidden keep mitzvah, tzav letzav, a mitzvah here, a mitzvah there, but they don't see beyond the mitzvah. What's a mitzvah supposed to teach me? Not just about that mitzvah, but about my entire lifestyle. I always like to give the following example of how a person can be a shomea likol Hashem and miss the point completely and not be a shomea bikol Hashem. I heard this maisa from Rabbi Gross when I was about 15 years old, maybe even younger. He told me this maisa in the name of his Rebbe, Reb Shlaga Feivel Mendelovich, the Menahel of Torah Vadas, the founder of Torah Mesorah. So his Rebbe told him that he was once invited Friday night to eat by a certain gvir who wanted the kovod of this Rosh Hashiva eating his home. The men came home from shul and the balabos knocked on the door, opened the door, looked inside and turned white, was ready to faint. So Shlaga Feivel said, I understood that something is very not right on the other side of that door. And I was curious, so I peeked in. And right away I saw the problem. The house was a mess. The table wasn't set, and the housewife looked like she just came from Mars. He said, I right away surmised the problem. This poor woman was tired from preparing for Shabbos, so while the men were in shul, she must have said to herself, you know what, I think I'm going to lie down for a few minutes and get up in plenty of time to put the house in order and set the table before the men come home from shul. And she fell into a deep sleep, and she didn't wake up until they knocked on the door. So the house was a mess, the table wasn't set, and she was hovering somewhere between this world and some other world. So Shlaga Feivel said, my initial feeling was that this man was embarrassed to bring me in the house because of the way it looked. But he said, as things progressed, I realized that wasn't the problem. Because he understood that I understood that this is not his fault, it's his wife's fault. He wasn't sure. You know what bothered him? On the table were the two challahs without a challah cover. Uncovered challahs. This man was afraid that Rabbi Shlaga Feivel would think that he was an Amba'aretz Gomor and he didn't know you're supposed to cover the challahs. So in order to make it clear that he knows you're supposed to cover the challahs and this is his wife's fault, he starts yelling at her. You are lazy, incompetent, don't you know you're supposed to cover the challahs? Now Rabbi Shlaga Feivel says, now I know that he knows you're supposed to cover the challahs. Shlaga Feivel said, at that moment I thought to myself, this is the most absurd thing I ever saw in my life. Why? Because one of the reasons we cover the challahs when we make Kiddush is because bread is more important than wine, and the bracha on bread is more important than the bracha on wine. And if we'd have bread and wine right now, we'd make a motzi and then a goffin. But Shabbos you can't do that, you have to make Kiddush first. Shlo yira hapas boshto, in order not to insult and embarrass the bread, we cover the challahs. Now, I don't know, maybe my wife bakes insensitive challahs. But I never came home from shul, said something not nice to my challahs. They ran off the table, locked themselves in their room until I could appease them and bring them back to the table. It happened a few times with my daughters. But it never happened with my challahs. Never. Personally, I never saw an embarrassed challah in my life. And if anybody here has seen one, I'm sure somebody professional could help you. So what does it mean? Don't embarrass a challah. Well, the simplest idea is that if you condition yourself not to insult and embarrass an inanimate object, you'll never come to embarrass and insult a human being. And here's a man, says Reb Shlaga Feivel, insulting his wife publicly to defend the honor of a piece of bread. Shmiya likol Hashem, 100%. Got the minig down pat. Shmiya bikol Hashem. What is it all about? What are you supposed to learn from it? What's the rotzon of the Rabban Shalom that's supposed to be exposed from those mitzvahs? Zero. That's what I learned from my Rebbe. Not just a bunch of halachas not just a bunch of sugyas. That we learned, Baruch Hashem also we learned. But we learned from his hanhogos. We learned from his menschlichkeit. We learned from his, the way that he conducted himself and his family. We saw what his family was like. We saw Rebbeim, who lived Torah, whose entire personality was Torah, whose entire values and standards were Torah. We saw what a Makom Torah was. We heard about their Rebbeim and their Rebbeim's Rebbeim. That's what influenced us as students and influenced an entire community and created the foundation of Torah in this community, which Baruch Hashem has flourished. How does a Levi, who's moved the Lumufrush, who creates a Makom Torah in the place that he's in, a Makom Torah that's not just a place for disseminating the knowledge of Torah, but disseminating Ratzon Hashem, the values and the standards of what Torah is, a Torah way of life. How does he do it? When Moshe Rabbeinu had to convince the Levim to accept the responsibility of being a Levi, so he told them the following: Ashreichem shenismanu shamoshim lamokom. You are fortunate that you have become the shamoshim of the Rabbanu Shel Olam. You're the Rabbanu Shel Olam shamoshim. Minister to the Rabbanu Shel Olam. But I think it can mean something else. Literally. You are the Rabbanu Shel Olam's sons. S-U-N-S. Shemesh. You're the shamoshim lamakom. A Rebbe, a mashpia, is a son. His students are his sons with an O. But he's the son with a U. What does the son do? The son, first of all, is up there so you can look at it and tell when it's day and when it's night and when it's this year or next year. It's one of the functions of the sun, the moon, and the stars to be able to navigate, to be able to know the times, to look up to them and know what is, where you're holding. That's a Rebbe, someone to look up to and to know how to gauge your life, whether it's daytime or nighttime, all the different times in life, to be able to guide them and lead them according to the celestial beings that are called Rebbeim, who you can look up to and set your life according to. And secondly, the sun is there to illuminate, gives light. A Rebbe is there to enlighten his Talmidim, to teach them Chochmas HaTorah, to teach them the wisdom of what Torah is. The sun also gives heat. A Rebbe's job is to be able to disseminate to his Talmidim not only intellectual knowledge, but warmth. To be able to nurture them emotionally. To be able to see that they have what they need, not only in their minds, but in their entire body, their entire makeup. That's what a Rebbe gives a Talmud. And lastly, the sun is the source of photosynthesis. The sun is what nurtures growth in this world. A Rebbe is there to bring out the kochos, to bring out the abilities and capabilities and talents of his Talmidim, to let them know what they can do. You know, it says in Pirkei Avos, Chaviv Ha'adam Shenivra B'Tzelem Elokim, people are very precious. We're created B'Tzelem Elokim. Chavivim Yisrael Shenikroim Bonim Lamakom, we're called children to the Rabbanu Shel Olam. We're given a Torah that is the tool of creation. But you know what's even more than what we were given? Chiba Yisera Nodas Lohen Shenivru B'Tzelem Elokim. The Rabbanu Shel Olam didn't only invest us with these qualities, abilities, capabilities, and talents. He let us know we have them. Because if you don't know what you have, and you don't know what you have to use, then it goes to waste. Then it remains potential. It's never a Rebbe not only helps a Talmid grow and brings out those abilities, capabilities, and talents, but he lets a Talmid know what he can do and what he can't do also. And that's what I got from my Rebbeim, from my Rebbe, Rav Yeshaya Ben Shneur Zalman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, all of these things. He was a person literally you could look up to, not just physically, spiritually. He's like a giant. He's someone you could look up to and know how to gauge your midos and your derech eretz according to how he functioned. He was a Rebbe who taught us what it was like to learn in the yeshiva. Bachrim knew we were interested in other things in those days, believe me. But he hammered into our heads what it means to learn a piece of Gemara. Not, you know, one of my Rosh Yeshivas, Boris Sorotskin, said, sometimes if you don't learn deeply, you can look over the Gemara. He says, most of the time you're overlooking the Gemara. In those days, we were more overlooking everything. But we had the Rebbe who taught us how to be ba'ayin, how to look. He enlightened us. And he also exuded a tremendous amount of warmth, like a father. And he didn't only nurture our minds, but he nurtured our emotion, nurtured our needs. And not just when we were Talmidim, but even way after that. And he was a Rebbe who knew each Talmid and what was good for them. And now two Talmidim got the same Hadracha. That's an Adam Gadol. I remember part of being able to let a Talmid know who he is and what he is, also what he's not, what he shouldn't do, what he can't do, and what's not proper. I remember that I was ready to leave Masift in 11th grade. I was in Rabbi Groner's shiur 2 years. He gave the higher shiur. I was in Rabbi Simon's shiur the first year in Masifta, and then I was skipped. Maybe they didn't want me to be in the middle shiur for some reason. I don't know why. But in any case, they skipped me to the higher shiur in my 11th grade. And I wanted to leave the Masifta. I already was in the highest shiur. I wanted to go to Tells. And I figured my Rebbeim would be overjoyed that I wanted to go to Tells Yeshiva. And Rabbi Groner and Yibod L'chaim Tovim Aruchim, Rabbi Simon, pulled me aside and told me, you're not ready. You're staying here another year. Because if you leave too early, it's not going to be in your best interest. As much as we would want to show success, we sent a bocher of ours, a Talmud, to Tells Yeshiva, what's good for you is not to go. I'll tell you something else they did. When I stayed already in Miami, but I couldn't go to Tells, but I wanted to be already a Tellser, by the Yeshiva Shebocher. And in the Masifta in those days, the dress was not a Yeshivish dress. We didn't dress black and white. We dressed in all the multi-technicolors, pants, shirts, didn't wear jackets, didn't wear hats. So I decided that if I can't leave the Masifta to go to Tells, I'll bring Tells to me. And I started wearing a black hat and a white shirt and a tie. And I thought that my Rebbeim would be overjoyed. Ah! I'll never forget Rabbi Groner and Yibod L'chaim Tovim Aruchim, Rabbi Simon, took me for a ride. And they said, get rid of the hat. Get rid of the jacket. This is not for you, nor is it for the place right now. And the Baruch Hashem was smart enough to listen to them. And now, I don't think they would tell me now to get rid of the get-up that I'm in, but at that point, that was important. It's important for a Rebbe not just to project himself into his Talmud, but know what's good for the Talmud. And each of my chaverim in the Sifta got the hadrocha that they needed, what was good for them. Not was good for the place, not was good for the name of the Masifta, what was good for that Talmud. And unfortunately today, that's something that is sorely missed in many, many places. I'll tell you something else about the son. The son knows how to change according to the times of day. The sun at midday is a different sun than the sun at Neitzachama or Shkia Sachama. The sun changes. It's not the same sun. Just the packaging is different, how it appears to us. Two tellsers, my rebbeim, Rabbi Groner Zeichet Tzadik Livrach and Yibod L'chaim Tovim Aruchim, Rabbi Simon and their families, came to Miami. And like I said, they transplanted yeshiva in the midbar of Miami. But they understood that you can't transplant it exactly, not that you have to change it, but you have to be able to package it. The Telzer Rosh Yeshiva of El Yomir Bloch, maybe my Rebbe, Mordechai Gifter Zatzal, to quote him, his uncle. Excuse me. The Navi begs the Rabbanu Shel Olam to give him Loshon Limudim, Le'us, Le'oyev Chochma. The Tozer Rosh Yeshiva said Le'us means to know the proper time and place, how to package the Torah properly. Not to change it, but to know how to package it according to the time and the place, without changing it. The packaging. And that takes a tremendous amount of gvura, malchus, to be able to know how to control situations and know when to react and when not to react, and how to take those same standards and values of Torah and make them palatable to the people that you're dealing. I'll tell you an example. Eliezer sees Rivka, gives her the test, and Rivka, he asks for a drink of water and she offers him a drink of water. That's all. He finishes drinking and then she offers to feed his camels. That's what happened. When Eliezer tells it over to Lavan and Besuel, he changes what happened. And he says, when I asked Rivka for a drink of water, she offered me water and offered the camels also at the same time. It's not what happened. Why did he change it? Chazal tell us that the midah of a tzaddik is emor ma'at va'aseh harbeh. Say a little and do a lot. A rosh, on the other hand, promises you the world and ends up not doing anything. And it's not because rishoyim are liars and they don't want to do everything. The Shirei Das explains that a rosh would also like to do everything. And that's why he promises you the world, thinking he can do it. But he doesn't understand that he has the Yetzer Hara. He doesn't understand that there are problems that could come up. And says he doesn't anticipate any problems. He thinks he's a kol yachol, he can do everything. So the first little problem that comes slips him up, and that's the end. So he's an emor harbeh. He promises the world, but he can't produce because he doesn't anticipate the fact that there's going to be problems. On the other hand, a tzaddik understands that there are problems in this world. And he's not a kol yachol. And he has to deal with them. So he doesn't promise a lot. But since he anticipates the problems, he's able to deal with them and overcome them. Rivka was a tzadekis. And therefore she didn't offer a tremendous amount. She said, look, take a drink. I see if I get past that, I'll be able to do more. After she finished giving him a drink, then she offered him for the camels. And that was a tremendous milah. But go tell a Rosh. Eliezer wants to tell Lavan and Besuel how great Rivka was. If he says, you know what, she offered me a drink, and then I drank, and then she offered me camels, they said, what kind of great person is this? In their eyes, greatness is promising the world. You know what it's like? Imagine a person who has audio dyslexia. I just made up that disease. Dyslexia is where you see things backwards. Audio dyslexia is where you hear them backwards. Meaning, I say yes, you hear no. I think some of my children had that when they were growing up. And somebody who has that disease says to you, is it nighttime now? In order to tell him the truth, what do you have to say? No. Because you know he's going to hear it as yes. You're not lying. You're just packaging it so he'll be able to hear it properly. They wanted to get across a message. Rivka is somebody special. Had they said that she offered a little bit and then a little bit more, what kind of special? In their eyes, the opposite is special. So Eliezer had to change it, to package it, get the same message across, but what they could hear. Our Rebbeim, in those days, we now appreciate it. I don't think we appreciate it then. Understood at the same time how to create a Makom Torah without compromising, without changing, and at the same time know how to package it for a bocher from Miami, in those days Miami, and at the same time to know when to look the other way, when to encourage and when to discourage. Tell you mice that happened in Masifta. I don't know if Rabbi Simon remembers. When we were in high school, the rage of the world were the Beatles. Not the six-legged variety, but the two-legged variety. And in case you are embarrassed to admit you know who the Beatles were, I'll tell you who they were. They were a rock band from Liverpool. And they were the rage of the world. And they started a fad that didn't exist before. They started a lot of fads, but one was, until the Beatles, no respectable businessman, professional man grew long hair. Hippies, bohemians grew long hair, but not professionals, not business people. Wasn't the mode in the world. The Beatles had long hair. So people started to mimic the Beatles, and professionals, respectable businessmen, began growing long hair. Long hairstyles for men. And whatever affects the Goyish world eventually affects the Jewish world and eventually affects the Frum Jewish world. And in the Masifta in those days, some of my friends, I never had a penchant for growing long hair, as you can see, but some of my friends, who will go unnamed right now, decided to stop taking haircuts. And after about 3 or 4 months, it started looking like a co-ed school. And I remember the Rebbeim called these boys in on a Friday and said to them, in no uncertain terms, you are either going to get a normal man's haircut today, the Kovod Shabbos, or on Sunday, we had school on Sunday, on Sunday, you are not to come back because you're suspended. And these boys were real Miami boys. They didn't just take that lying down. But they said, Rebbe, a Nazir has long hair. And he's holy. We just want to be holy people. They said, Rebbe, the Ragachover Gomes. You ever saw a picture of him? He has a big head of hair. Because he didn't take off his yarmulke because he didn't want to stop learning. So he didn't take a haircut. We just want to be like the Ragachover. The Rebbeim said, haircut or don't come back on Sunday. Why? Because maybe there's nothing wrong halachically from the Dalet Chelkei Shulchan Aruch with a man having long hair. Could be you can go through the Dalet Chelkei Shulchan Aruch and you won't find anything wrong. Could be. But if the reason you're growing long hair is to be like the Beatles, it's treifi chazer. So when to look the other way, and there were plenty of things to look the other way in those days, which were not issues to make a big deal about and didn't change the yesod, just the packaging of what Torah was, but things that were an ikker and things that meant and had implications. And they knew that this would make an impression on a bocher, what is permitted and what's not. There they stood their ground. And the packaging had to be also the way the Torah has to be. The Navi describes Shaul HaMelech as Mishichmo Ulamala Gavoa Mikol Ha'am. Always bothered me, that's not how a tall person is. He's not the same as everybody else, and from his shoulders up, he's taller than he's a giraffe. What does it mean, Mishichmo Ulamala? There's two ways to be higher than other people. One is your feet start where their head ends, and you're above them. And the other way is to be firmly planted on the ground amongst them, but to be head and shoulders above them. That was Rabbi Groner. His feet were firmly planted on the ground. He knew what he was getting into when he came here to Miami. Maybe didn't know before he came to Miami. We knew very quickly when he came here. And he knew what he had to do and what to be that Shemesh, Shamoshim LaMokum, and how to create that Mokum Torah. And yet, with his feet firmly planted on the ground, and together, not isolated from others, but mamish, together with everyone, at the same time insulated, at the same time someone to look up to, head and shoulders above whatever else existed in the community. And I've been told by people here to remember those days 50, 55 years ago as youngsters, that this was the first impression of what a yeshivish person was. And it made an impression. It made an impression that lasted for the last 50, 60 years of them. And because of that, they were able to raise mishpachos l'shem u'l'tiferes. Look at Rabbi Groner's mishpacha. Look at Yibodel L'chaim Tovim Baruchim, Rabbi Simon, Bitsy Simon's Mishpacha. These were children raised in Miami, not somewhere else. How did they do it? Because they were able to be Shamoshim L'makom. To be able to be a Levi, who at the same time of being Mufrash, was able to be Mashpia, at the same time to live in their Mokum Torah and raise their children in their Mokum Torah, and to bring all the other children they had, including myself, into that Mokum Torah. Not an easy task, but something that all of every one of you, whether you remember North Miami Beach or Miami Beach 50 years ago or you don't, whether you're newcomers here or maybe you're not even 50 years old yet, but you all benefit. You're here, you benefit from those seeds that they planted. And therefore I feel it an honor and very appropriate when Rav Pesach Goodman called me in New York and he said, you're going to be here in Miami. Maybe we can call together a hesped for Rabbi Groner. And even though this evening was supposed to be a fundraiser for my yeshiva, but a hesped for Rabbi Groner is so much more valuable to my yeshiva than all the money in the world. Because whatever I am and whatever talmidim I have are his talmidim. And they are his legacy. And if I can achieve that at least, to give you a little bit, a taste of what it means to be a Talmud, to a Rebbe of such stature, to Rebbeim of such stature, that you should have a little Hakaras HaTov to the people who planted the seeds, so you can have a Torah community that exists today that would not be here without the Mesiris Nefesh of those soldiers of the Rabbanu Shel Olam, Chayil Hashem, who decided to come to the front and not sit comfortably in the back ranks, then that's worth everything in the world. Rabbi Groner should be a Melech Yosher for his family, for his extended family and Talmidim all over the world. I am not the only one. I'm one of many, many, and many greater than me. And a Melech Yosher for the entire greater Miami community. And from Shamayim, he should continue to be a Levi, a Shemesh, to be able to be Mashpia, to go before the Kisei HaKavod, and to see that this community grows and flourishes. Ad Sheyavula HaMoves LaNetzach U'mochol HaShem Dima Mi'al Koponim V'Diyas Grotzedek V'Hedot Yom.